Calling the meeting back to order. How are we doing tonight? We good? Yeah? I realized the other night that I had to get stronger readers. You know how I've been like messing up a little bit here and there? So I read this chart that said that my eyes, for the age I am, I needed like a quarter more, you know, more magnification. Weird. We'll see if it works. Welcome, everyone. Let's have the Pledge of Allegiance done. And I think tonight, I think we should have Ricky Ramirez do it. What do you guys think? Yeah? Let's encourage him, yes? Fresh off a plane, let's just go ahead and have him do it. Oh, yeah, at the podium, indeed.
All right, it's been a while, so please stand. Ready to begin. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and the Republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you, Ricky. Okay, moving on to Section D, Adoption of the Agenda. Seeking a motion?
Move.
Second?
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any noes? Anyone saying, I don't know? So moved. All right, Section E, Recognitions, Presentations. E1, the Ontario Montclair School District's Read, Explore, and Develop Read into Kinder program as presented by our very own lovely Dr. Alana Hughes Hunter, who just celebrated her birthday, Assistant Superintendent of SELPA and Equity.
Thank you so much. Good evening, Madam President, board members, Superintendent Hammond, staff, and members of the community. It is my pleasure to introduce a presentation highlighting the meaningful partnership between Ontario Montclair School District and the City of Ontario and Montclair. The Read, Explore, and Develop initiative, which throughout the presentation will be referred to as READ. This initiative is a testament to our shared commitment to fostering early literacy, supporting families, and cultivating a loving and learning environment from the earliest years. Tonight, Yesenia Arvizu and Ricky Ramirez will share how this collaborative effort will help to build a strong foundation for lifelong learning in our community. One correction I would like to make is that we have commitment already from Ontario, City of Ontario, and we are still in we're still in conversations with the County of Montclair. We are very confident they will join us as well. But without further ado, please join me in welcoming Yesenia and Ricky.
Thank you. Good evening, President Rivas and Board, Dr. Hammond, Cabinet. Thank you for the opportunity to present tonight. My wife says I have a very monotone voice, so I apologize that you have to listen to me for the next 5 minutes. But the presentation that you see up here, and as Dr. Hughes-Hunter explained, this is an initiative that really focuses on early literacy and encouraging our 3- and 4-year-olds to read at home. The vision is to really spark that lifelong love of reading and learning, and we want to be able to support our preschool and TK families and students so that they can have the tools and the resources at home in order to achieve that vision. This initiative begins with a summer kickoff. You can see here that on July 29th, our goal would be to host an event in conjunction with the City of Ontario and the City of Montclair, where families would come, they would receive a library card, they would register for an app that I'll explain in a little bit, and then they would engage with a guest reader. This would all be advertised via our social media platforms, Instagram, Parent Square, things of that nature, and just really wanting parents to come out and to start off this initiative in this way. So following that event on August 21st, our goal would be to host a family literacy night. This would be our kickoff into this initiative that we are calling Read Into Kinder. On August 21st from 5 to 6:30 in the Linda Vista NPR, we would introduce the program to our families. We would talk to them about it, explain kind of what it's all about, the idea that they would receive books by reading at home with their children. And also by attending, they would receive a bookcase, bookshelf that you see there that we're in the process of purchasing, that they would be able to take that home and they would place all of their books obviously there on that bookshelf. These are some of the resources that we've developed in our department to advertise and encourage this initiative. We have a hub that focuses on all of the tools and all the resources available to families. This includes access to the City of Ontario and the City of Montclair websites, all of the activities that are offered in their libraries. We also have, you can see on the far left there, a recommended book list. And so we have aligned the TK curriculum in particular with books that are in that curriculum and books that we're recommending that parents could read with their children at home. They don't necessarily have to operate under this list, but we do have 100 books available and recommended for preschool and TK there. And then what I mentioned earlier was this digital component. It's called Footsteps to Brilliance. It's an app. It's also on the website where parents through the San Bernardino County Superintendent of Schools offers this as a free resource to our families. And so families can log in. They have access to different guided readers, leveled readers, different activities that parents can engage in at home. It's just another way for parents to be able to read with their children at home if they don't have physical hard copies of books. And then the main way that we want to track this is through a reading passport. And so I have here just kind of what it would look like. It would be something like this that we would print out in our print shop, and parents would be able to have this at home. Once they are reading, they would just color in different books that they're reading with their child. And then this is what would serve as a way for them to turn in and access the books that they're going to receive as kind of motivation for reading with their children at home. The other piece that Yesenia is going to talk about deals with just the parent component and how we're kind of aligning it as well with that.
Thank you, Ricky. President Rivas, I have come to terms that I need glasses as well. Good evening. Good evening, President Rivas, board members, Dr. Hammond, Cabinet, and our guest with us tonight. Thank you for the opportunity to follow up on what Ricky has shared thus far. At the Parent Education Center, we will be hosting bi-monthly parent workshops in collaboration with preschool teachers on assignment TOAs, as well as the Parent Education Center TOAs. And they are going to be focusing these workshops on building self-regulation, reading development, early skills in math so that parents can't infuse these practices at home with their children. The workshops are also going to focus on using arts, using strategies, connecting children to healthy practices, all evolving literacy. Additionally, I am ecstatic that I have a childcare classroom already at the Parent Education Center that I went ahead and transformed it into a preschool setting classroom so that when parents take these workshops at the Parent Education Center, this microphone is weird, I'm sorry. It is in a setting that their children will be used to once they start at our school. So I'm very excited that the Parent Education Center will be working with preschool because they will offer the workshops to parents, and then one of my TOAs will be inviting the parents with their children in this classroom to practice what they have learned throughout these workshops. So I'm very excited for that. I'm a sucker for books. I mean, the little passport that Ricky showed us, I remember my kids coming home with these passports And, you know, the excitement of the kids saying, can you sign here when a page is completed? So I do believe that this will grow, you know, in the coming years. I love the connection that we are making with preschool family and community engagement and using that parent education center as a hub. You know, not only for parents, but now we're welcoming parents to bring their children. So I'm very excited for that opportunity. We are also going to invite guest speakers. I do believe that when you invite guests that are experts in that field, you know, to speak to our parents, that's also beneficial, right? We're all parents, we all have kids, and we're all in this profession. And so when parents see us, you know, be human and present to them and share our experiences in raising our kids and infusing that importance of literacy, it really validates the work that we are doing. So I'm excited for that. I'd also like to talk about the partnership that we have. Next slide, please. The partnership that we are building with both of our libraries. We are hoping that we will be successful with the Tales After Twilight, where we will have city community leaders read to our children at both of our libraries. And so we already have our city manager, Scott Ochoa, who said he would do it. We have our fire chief, Mike Gerken, who said he would do it, some of our council members. And I challenged this beautiful group before me to be guest speakers at our libraries as well, so that you know, our community can see us as we move this initiative forward. I will bring back my colleague, Ricky, so that he can talk about the finances now. Thank you.
So this is kind of where the crux of the program lies. And as I mentioned before, the idea is that parents will receive a bag of books. And they receive those books by, for one, attending the family literacy kickoff. They will receive 5 books by attending the parent trainings that Jesse just described. And then they'll also receive books by completing their passport, 5 books for every 10 books that they read. And so if you take all of that into account, it's a total of 80 possible books that a parent could end up taking home with them in one calendar year. 80 books in preschool and then 80 books in TK. So by the end of those 2 years, you're talking about 160 books that a family could have at home available reading with their children. So it's just a great opportunity for them. And then we want to have some type of culminating activity, a celebration. And so this is something that's still in the works, but it would be an end of the year activity. We would invite parents and students to come and just celebrate the reading that they've done and maybe learn more about what they can do to continue to support their children at home. We've also talked about having possibly 2 tiers, where the first tier would be that they would obviously receive maybe a certificate for reading and turning in and submitting their passport. Whereas a second tier might be some type of assessment that perhaps our preschool teachers or our TK teachers could engage in, just to monitor the level of success that those students have had by reading at home. And it could be as simple as a fluency assessment, just something real basic like that. Now the budget, this is something that obviously we want our City of Ontario and City of Montclair involved in. And so what we did is we took our preschool and TK student numbers as of this past year, broken down by those students that are in the City of Ontario versus the City of Montclair. And you can see there, assuming that there is an 80% involvement rate, could be higher, it could be lower, obviously. But looking at different options as far as either Barnes & Noble, which would be on the more higher end, an average of about $6 a book, versus a website that we found called The Book Bundler, which is ranges anywhere between 90 cents to up to $1.75 per book. Those books are gently used, but they're actually in great condition. We ordered a box and looked at them, and they're some very high-quality books. But you can see the breakdown there in terms of cost as far as what the City of Ontario versus the City of Montclair would be asked to maybe participate with in joining us in this partnership. And then that ends the presentation. I don't know if there's any questions.
Of course we have questions, Ricky. Right. I'll start with Miss Sarah on my far left.
Well, you know that everyone up here is a big advocate of reading and definitely early childhood assessment. We are so happy that we are just growing in how we can help our kids and the age groups that we're doing it. So it's not a question, it's just thank you so much for your presentation.
Mm-hmm. All right, thank you. Flora?
You're bouncing back and forth.
I'm bouncing all over the place. I'm keeping you guys jumping.
So yes, thank you for the presentation. I do have a question. On page 5, you mentioned the Read Into Kinder Hub. So in order for them to go ahead and have access to this program, they only need to go ahead and register for a library card? How are they going to access it?
It's one aspect. I think if we obviously want to encourage reading, they can obtain a library card to be able to check out books at the library to take those then to read at home. The Hub is more just a resource for families. It's there for them to access the digital component. We have our 100 books listed on there. We have the passport on there. So it's more of just a resource page for families regarding this initiative.
Okay. And yes, I do think that the passport booklet is really neat. Mm-hmm. It's a visual incentive for even parents.
Yeah, for sure.
So thank you for that. The other question that I had was regarding the budget. You mentioned Barnes & Noble versus the book bundler. You had two options. So let's just for hypothetical scenario, and I'm going to say Montclair because I'm going to pick on my own city. If Montclair says, okay, well, I know Ontario is going to go with Barnes & Noble, but we're going to elect to go to book bundler. Do they have that flexibility or option to do that or no? Is it going to just be like this section or this section?
I think the titles that you'll find within the book bundler are very similar to what you would find at Barnes & Noble. The main difference being that they're gently used, as I mentioned earlier. So I think more from a cost perspective, we're probably better off going through the book bundler just in terms of the amount of money that would be required up front or even throughout the year. And not knowing the level of involvement at this point.
Yeah. That would be very encouraging. Hey, if you if you join us now, you'll save money.
Yeah.
So good tactic. But thank you so much for your presentation and answering my question.
Thank you, Flora. Chris, you're up.
Well, you know how happy I am about this. I am thrilled to death, and I so appreciate everybody's input and working with this. I won't say it's my idea, but I was involved from the very beginning. And I apologize to you already.
I heard.
But it is wonderful, and I just think this could go whole hog, and I just think it's wonderful. Thank you, guys.
Thank you, Chris. Sonia?
You know, I love the idea. Been asking for it for a while now. But thank you, guys, for putting this together. Are the books bilingual? Are they able to access bilingual books?
There are options for bilingual books, and that's a great question. I think and it's definitely within the digital platform. There are books within there that are in Spanish, mm-hmm. And they can be translated. There's a button you would click that would translate it, and it can be read to them in Spanish or English. So that would be one way to access the language. But the book bundler does also offer some options in Spanish.
Because we have Mandarin.
That too.
Spanish.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, and then... the marketing, how do you guys plan to market this? Do you have the teachers buy in, or how is that going to work?
We did present kind of a draft just to get our preschool teachers aware of what this was about. And so we attended meetings that they had a couple months ago. So they're aware and they're very excited about it. Obviously, I know Irma and the communications team will do a great job in terms of promoting through social media. Like I mentioned, the cities I know will also be involved. On their website, they have a magazine, I believe, that they might want to advertise as well, the Ontario City Living magazine. So I think there's different ways that we can go out there and
because I know that. Some of our schools are doing that and some of them are not. So like Miguel, my son, he was in kinder, TK in kinder, and they read throughout the whole year. And if they read so many books, they got a certificate mm-hmm. at the end of the for the awards for the end of the school year. But can we add first grade to this?
Baby steps.
Miguel's in first grade. Gonna disqualify me. Thank you, guys.
Just have him change the year he was born and show up. That's teaching him math. Yeah, this is one of the perils of going last, is that all my questions were already answered by the time it gets to me. But Ms. Solana, you mentioned something about the city of Montclair, a little hiccup of them not being on board or something.
I wouldn't call it a hiccup. We're just still in conversation with them, and I think Dr. Hammond can elaborate because he's been talking to them directly. I don't think there's necessarily a hiccup, and we are very confident. I'll let Dr. Hammond take it from there.
It was a very productive conversation. In fact, you know, just to backtrack a little bit, Ontario is committed. The city manager has given his commitment. As you know, they have purchased the vending machines for all the elementaries on the Ontario side, so this kind of coincides with that partnership. On the Montclair side, I do feel confident that the city of Montclair will be supportive in regards to the annual purchasing of the books. The unique relationship with Montclair is the library in the city is actually a county library. So they need to bring the county into the conversation. But actually, Ms. Sandoval sat with me. We met with the county librarian. They're on board. So you just have to kind of do the dance with the county and the city at the same time. So it's just a slower walk to get them involved. I think one of the places where we're hedged is I do have a verbal commitment. I don't think he would mind me saying this. Is Kirk Hagman, who purchased the vending machines on the Montclair side for all your elementary schools, was excited to hear about this initiative. And I think if there is any type of stall or, you know, trepidation, which I don't anticipate, he would be a pretty easy phone call to make. And I think he would get very involved to support us with these initiatives as well. And to be further hedged, we do have a preschool grant that has restricted funds, that there is an ongoing resource there where we could also purchase books. So I think we're triple hedged on support for the Montclair side.
So they're on board for this event slated for July already. Yes?
The event itself, not officially, but they should be. I think the tone is the ball's in their court to set up the second conversation for us in the county.
So we haven't released this as an invite yet to everyone?
No. We still have some time.
This is still in the works.
Yeah, there's a runway for the summer event piece.
Okay, so don't go posting this or...
Yeah, allow our communications team to do that.
Okay, all right. So I just wanted to make that clear.
Yeah,
okay.
Thank you.
All right, I didn't want to get my wires crossed. Okay, I just want to make that clear so everybody's on the same page. Okay, because that's what I want to see. Are the cities joined together on this event? Because it didn't sound like there's a little, you know, we'll disjunction there. Okay. And then one of my questions was, are the parent workshops, are they getting any kind of affirmation or acclamation in this project? But you're saying the books are their gifts. But the books are the gifts for the kids, actually. But I guess because parents, I guess whatever the kids get, we're supposed to feel really warm and fuzzy about it too, right? I guess. No, I'm just kidding. Of course. But you guys answered the questions too, because then we're talking about later on down the line, maybe, you know, do certificates and then a little party at the end. So you guys answered that question already. So you're already thinking two steps ahead of us. So thank you for answering that question too, Ricky and Jesse. And then... the other comment I had was the monotone voice. Your wife likes it.
I don't know if she does, but you know, it is what it is.
How long have you been married?
That's how I was born, so almost 17 years.
Then she must like it.
Maybe.
So, and the gesticulation adds to it, so I wouldn't complain about it.
And did you just get off a plane, I heard someone said?
I did, yes.
Go home and go to bed.
So you guys are rock stars. Thank you so much. Dr. Hammond, do you have any comments or questions for these two?
Yeah, no, very good. I think just to kind of piggyback on some of those comments and questions, you know, the books that we're targeting, if you see in the packet, there's actually the top 100 books that are recommended for 3- and 4-year-olds. And so that's going to be the target to try to build a at-home library for families, for young families that have 3- and 4-year-olds. And so as they move on. And so the whole goal really is to, like our presenters did so well in presenting, is to get kids exposed to the love of reading. But at the end of the day, if you go from a research perspective, the empirical research, if kids come into kindergarten at grade level, ready to read, that really is the biggest impact on addressing the achievement gap. So if you really look at studies of students that go into kindergarten that have exposure to reading on a consistent basis, birth to five, and the rule of thumb is 20 minutes of reading every day from birth to 5 years old, they're ready for kindergarten and they're at grade level, and the words that they know, read, write, and can comprehend and understand are on par versus kids that aren't read to consistently. And so your achievement gap actually starts in kindergarten. People think this achievement gap thing kind of starts with standardized testing. It actually starts with grade level readiness in kindergarten. And school systems, public school systems, do a great job of always narrowing the delta by the times kids graduate. But if we really want to address the achievement gap, I think getting kids ready for kindergarten, particularly in the areas of literacy and reading comprehension, will be critical. So that's why I'm very excited, you know, about this. And I think one of the things, to answer a lot of the trustees' questions, which were great questions, is that Footsteps to Brilliance, the digital platform that the county provides, which is a free platform once you get registered with the county, as well as, and I don't know, Ms. Sandoval, you might have to correct me on this, and I know Ricky has, Mr. Ramirez has familiarity with it, but the county also has ABC Mouse, which if you register and get a county library card, they get to set up a username and password for free. And that digital platform is, I think, as a parent, you've used that. Maybe you can share with the board a little bit about the digital platform and possibly the integration of ABC Mouse. So we might have two digital platforms that are part of this program, which will give a lot of diverse opportunities for parents to have not just the traditional book, but a digital book, which has a lot of versatility.
Yeah, and I'm sure you've seen the commercials on TV, but it's similar in terms of the end result. It kind of walks parents through and gives them an opportunity to engage with different readings and different texts on a digital level. But I've used it with my little ones in the past, and I know a lot of when I was a principal, our teachers would use it. So there's a lot of, I think, research behind that particular website and its success in being able to promote that love for learning and early literacy.
And that's why I think this is exciting. We have the traditional modality of here's your book and sit down with your child and read the book and talk about the book, do the anticipatory type of dialogue, or, you know, break open your iPad or your laptop and register in Footsteps to Brilliance or ABC Mouse and have a digital reading experience. And so that's just how we are in the 21st century, which is exciting. So
thank you so much. Great job, guys. Right.
Thanks, everybody.
Thank you.
Go home, get some rest. Eat a snack first, though.
Did you ride a bike in Amsterdam?
All right, thank you. Okay, moving on to presentation number two. Time's up already? Oh, what was that? Okay, E2, the 2025-2026 proposed Ontario Montclair School District budget as presented by Phil Hillman, our chief business official.
Well, thank you, Madam President, and good evening, trustees, Dr. Hammond, cabinet, and guests in the audience. I'd like to ask Vanessa Eastland, our chief financial officer, to step up to the podium to assist in the presentation tonight. And I'd like to start by saying, Dr. Hammond, this is the 15th budget you've presided over. 1-5. Pretty amazing. Some longevity there. So,
just a little higher than my IQ. That's good.
I'd say some congratulations are in order for a 15th budget. As we look at the budget upcoming, our district budget, obviously it's tied in heavily with the state budget, and I'll talk about that in a moment. But the biggest thing is our budget, which is a document that is 200 pages full of facts and figures, is actually a representation of our educational program in dollars. So when you go through there, you can see everything that we do in this district operationally to support our kiddos, to support staff. And so it really is an expression of our educational program. Tonight, the budget adoption, the board will be asked to consider the final budget. And basically, they're certifying a few things. And you can see the list there, including that there's a public hearing tonight, but there was a public hearing several weeks ago as well. The one small detail I'd like to share with you is that second bullet. The state actually makes us go through a long questionnaire. I would say it's 20 to 25 pages of budget questions. And basically, they're asking us, are you going to be solvent? I mean, it all comes down to, are you going to be solvent? And it's a very interesting questionnaire, I would say, but it's something that is our staff takes a lot of pride in, and also takes pride in us keeping us solvent. So thought I'd highlight that. It's called Criteria and Standards, and the state requires that. This is, you've seen this slide before. This is the state budget process, and just to review, January 10th, Governor came out with his proposed budget, and then on May 14th, he updated that budget with a few changes and some economic updates. What's not on here is just 2 days ago, the governor and the legislature actually did agree on a budget. You have not probably seen much on it yet because there hasn't been a ton of detail that has come out yet. But I expect that the governor within the next few days will sign that budget. And in general, I think it was positive for K-12. As I reviewed some of the information that came out, we have a little more information on that at the back of the presentation that I'll share with you. But again, nothing is final until the governor signs it. This roadmap is kind of an interesting one, but this is this district budget timeline. So you can see we're starting in July of 25. The adopted budget begins. So July 1 is when our adopted budget takes effect. But then we've got multiple milestones along the way, ending in September of 26, and that is when we present the year-end close numbers to you. So all of this makes up our budget timeline. What I'd like to do now is turn it over to Ms. Eastland, and she can she can take the remote, which is hard to say, but she can take the remote control and control it herself.
Thank you. Before we get started on the highlights for the 25-26 proposed budget, well, let's first take a look at where we are now and where we project we're going to end this school year under the 24-25 estimated actuals. There aren't a lot of changes from here as compared to second interim when it comes to our revenue highlights, with the exception of the one-time transfer for the student one-to-one devices that we're in the process of purchasing. But that's really the biggest change that we have from our second interim. And on the expenditure side, now that we have more assumptions with our salaries and our benefits, with more payroll data, we've adjusted our estimated actuals to reflect that. Since we're getting closer to the close of the school year, we've also adjusted any carryovers that we may have that will then go into the 25-26 budget. But those were really the biggest changes for the 24-25 estimated actuals. But that is the starting point to lead us into the proposed budget. And that provides a baseline, so then that way we can start to see what 25-26 proposed budget. And the next few slides, they're going to build upon each other and are really the key components to what essentially make up our multi-year projections, starting with enrollment projections. We monitor enrollment projections closely because they, number one, tie into birth rates, but also that's the baseline when we're projecting our largest revenue source, LCFF revenue, and some of our other various revenue sources. But naturally, as we experience a decline in our enrollment, that naturally ties into our ADA, but our expenses don't necessarily account for the same decline in revenue as expenses, just really due to our educational structure. So that's something that we're always monitoring when we're looking, when we're comparing enrollment to what expenses we have in the future years. And to build upon that, this is something that we're always taking a look at is the enrollment trends, because our enrollment at OMSD tends to follow the trends of a few years prior. So if we see that birth rates are increasing, then we expect to see an increase in enrollment a few years down the line, and same if decrease. So this helps provide a snapshot of where we believe we're going to end a few years once the students enter transitional kindergarten or kindergarten. So this is a good metric to see where we're trending when we're building out our budget. And the next thing that we focus on when we're looking at the budget is our largest revenue source, which is in the form of LCFF revenue. And the biggest pieces that have been updated are the COLA rates as of the May revise, so that's been updated, as well as the total funded ADA, which is based off of 3 years historical rolling average. And as we can see in the starting the 26-27 year, that starts to flatten out, which will be good in terms of our LCFF revenue, because that means our funded ADA isn't declining as much as we've seen in the prior year. So that's good news to see when we're looking at the projections. And so just to walk through kind of how LCFF works, I love this slide because you get to see the actual calculation, but a few key factors play into that when we're looking at, when we're building the 25-26 revenue side of the house. And the biggest piece is starting with our baseline, which is this year, and then projecting, okay, what is COLA, which is 2.3% for next year. And if declining enrollment or enrollment was not factored in, we would stop there. But the way that our LCFF works is we have to factor in any changes with enrollment, whether that's an increase or a decrease per se. And so since we have funded decline, we have to take that into account, which equates to about $6.1 million. And so then that gives us a starting point of where we believe our revenue is going to be starting the 25-26 school year. So we're essentially flat year over year. We have about a 0.02% growth. So when we're talking about COLA, we also have to net it with the decline in enrollment to see what COLA looks like for OMSD. So this is a great slide that illustrates that process. And there are other one-time revenue sources that are built into our budget. Where we're going to see these revenue sources are on the restricted side of the budget. And really, this is the revenue sources that we see on here are multi-year plans. And these are balances as of the end of June 30, 2026, so next school year. And all of these have a spending deadline. So we're on track to spend all of the grants by the spending deadline. And we'll be able to see in our multi-year that it's been a purposeful spend down in our restricted side of the budget over the multi-course of the various different years. And the most notable ones are the educator effectiveness and our learning recovery block grant. So we'll continue to track those expenses to verify that we'll meet the spending deadline. And then before we look at the actual multi-year, let's take a look at some of the other factors that are impacting the multi-year for 25-26. And the biggest one is the COLA, which is down from 2.43 in January. And so now the proposed approved one is 2.3%. And as of right now, there aren't any major changes to any ongoing or one-time revenue sources that are built in the 25-26 budget. And we do have a textbook transfer planned for next school year. Our Fund 17 set aside for textbook adoption will help fund that. So that's what that last bullet point is representing. And on the expense side, we've adjusted our salaries and our benefits based off of our projected enrollment, as well as any natural adjustments like step and column, PERS or STRS rates increases. But we also build in any potential increases such as utilities or any of our operating costs or technology. If we know that we're going to have any technology purchases in the upcoming school years, we'll build that into our budget as well. And then, of course, any one-time spend down of funds that are set to expire. And a few other notable things that will impact not only next year, but the future years after are really the new requirement for the 10-to-1 TK. So effective 25-26, we are required to be staffed 10-to-1. This year it was 12-to-1, but now the requirement changes to 10-to-1 for next year. So those expenses in anticipation of that have been built into our budget, as well as any changes that we are expecting for next school year. And so these are the things that kind of have a rolling impact that are built into the multi-year budget. So that leads us to this. And this is where we can see the current year, the 25-26 budget year, and the 2 years that we're required to at least have a 3% minimum reserve. So I'll walk through a few items on our multi-year. And the information that we reviewed on the other slides helps illustrate what the multi-year that we're presenting. And so the first thing is establishing the estimated actuals, which is where we believe we're going to end this year. the preliminary budget, which is our 25-26 proposed budget, and then also the next 2 years to demonstrate that we're able to meet the state required 3% up until 27-28. And the biggest things that we take a look at is any changes to net increase or decrease, which factor in a lot of the points that we reviewed on the prior slides. Do we have a positive ending fund balance, of which we do in all of the years presented, as well as do we meet the 3% in the 27-28 year, and we do. And for the 25-26 year, that's about $12.8 million requirement. And this is just a historical and a projected snapshot of the percent of the ending fund balance for the prior years, as well as the years that are presented on the multi-year. And on the restricted side of the house, this is where we get to see the purposeful spend down of the one-time funds that we reviewed on the prior slide, such as the learning recovery, the educator effectiveness block grant, and so on. And as you see in the 27-28 year, that's where we start to level out because we've spent the majority of the funds by the due date for the one-time grants. So that's where we can see that reflected in the multi-year. And the biggest thing on the restricted side is restricted funds tend to balance the programs themselves. So we look to see, do we have at least a net positive in all of the years, and we do in our restricted programs, and that we also restrict the funds for the purposes that they're meant for. And lastly, for the operating budget, before we move on to the other funds, are two of the items that Mr. Hillman had touched upon for the state budget. So there were a few items that were pending prior to us finalizing the proposed budget. And we just needed more information to determine what that meant for our school district and what the state budget would ultimately approve. And the two big items are the universal TK add-on ratio, which will help fund the 10-to-1 ratio. So currently right now we have the expenses built in our budget. The revenue will help offset the new requirement. So that's something that we'll build into our budget once we have the final approval from the state budget. And the other one is the one-time discretionary block grant. And that's really meant for to help with any rising costs that we have in our budgets, as well as any state priorities that may be built into that one time. And that has a spending deadline of June 30, 2029. So that's something we'll build into our future budgets once we have the final numbers of what that would look like for our district. So we'll bring more information on this at a future date. And lastly, we'll take a look at the other funds that really help provide us support for the services that we have here at our district. And the biggest things that to look at on this slide is, do we have at least a balancing ending fund balance or a positive ending fund balance? And all of these are as of June 30, 2026, with the exception of the last one, the PARS Trust, which is actuals based off of June 30, 2024. And we'll start with the two programs that have a direct service for our students, and that is the child development, which services our preschool students, and our food and nutrition, which provides healthy meals for our students, which both have a healthy ending fund balance projected for next school year. And Fund 17, this one is going to help pay for our textbook adoption, and that is reflected in our 25-26 budget. And the next three funds are meant really to help with our OPEB or our retiree health benefits expenses that we have, as well as our workers' comp and our property and liability programs. And lastly are the construction and our facilities. And this has really been helpful with building, you know, some of the great buildings that we've been able to do over the past few years, as well as keep up with any facilities and maintenance projects that we have, or our developer fees, which would be for growth that we have. So all of these have a healthy fund balance and are projected for where we're going to end for next year. And that concludes the presentation. Are there any questions?
Nicely done. We'll start with Flora this time.
So I'm a little slow today. So I'm going to have you refresh my memory regarding, I saw that the buckets that you have, yeah. On Measure K, mm-hmm. you have a zero.
Yes.
What does that entail? What do you...
So that the majority of the fund, or all of the funds that are currently available right now, are helping pay for the Vinadinks project.
Okay.
And then, but we do still have room, and correct me if I'm wrong, Phil, with the terms, we still have room to issue the remaining funds in our Fund 21 when that time comes. So even though we have a zero balance here, we do still have room to issue the remaining funds that are left in the balance for our Measure K ballot.
Okay.
Correct. We still have Series D.
Okay.
So this would be the expiration of Series A, B, and C. And then Series D, we would issue and get replenishment of the construction dollars to do more projects. After Series D, we are limited. The Measure K is then almost done, but we do have one more series.
Yeah, almost depleted. It's a timing on the series, right?
Correct, because we don't want to issue too early. The IRS frowns upon you issuing tax-exempt debt prior to construction projects, so you time it to where when your construction goes, you issue debt.
Okay. Yeah. Thank you. I have brain fog. Once I think of the question, I'll reach out to the office again. Thank you so much for your presentation.
Thank you. Okay, so you're good, Flora, for right now? Okay. All right. So we'll move on to Sonia.
Thank you. I don't have any questions.
You can. Okay. It's summer. Okay, moving on to Chris.
Thank you, Vanessa.
And Sarah?
Thank you. Oh, and your team.
Yes, absolutely. Yes.
And your team. Yeah.
I want to know. It's my turn now, right? Okay. Oh, you remember now? Should we let her go again, guys? What do you think? Yes? All right. They said yes. Go ahead.
Thank you. Okay. So on slide 17, you have reserve funds, where it shows that we're going to be in a positive kind of number. Mm-hmm. I like the number for 2024-25. Mm-hmm. Is there a reason why in the subsequent years there's no addition? Is there a reason why it's not a projected amount there? why it's not increasing?
Sure. I think one of the biggest reasons is declining enrollment. You know, the state pays us on how many kids we have in seats at schools. The difficulty comes in reducing operational costs at a proportional level. So, for instance, if we lose 400 kids district-wide, that's about 12 kids per school site, right? So when you look at 12 kids per school site, do you reduce custodial? Pretty hard. Do you reduce maintenance? Pretty hard to do. Do you reduce teachers? If they come in nice, neat boxes, yes. So it's harder to reduce operational expenses at the level that when you're declining. So I would say that is the primary reason, declining enrollment. Also, the COLAs that we're seeing at the state level are less than we've seen in the past several years. So when you look at a 2.3% COLA this year, as Ms. Eastland illustrated, with declining enrollment, it becomes about a break even. That coupled with the fact that we start the year with built-in increases. And I say that because we have step and column increases for our employees. We have increases to our utility costs. Yeah. So those are the primary reasons, I think. Declining enrollment, low COLA, operating costs, difficult to reduce at a very proportional level. But having said that, you know, cabinet's had plenty of discussions on how to address this, and I think, you know, Dr. Hammond can address that even further. But we've had many discussions on how to arrest this deficit spending, and I'm confident we will.
I'm sure you will, and I appreciate your patience with me because I know this information. It's just like just needing a gentle reminder.
Of course.
So thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. I like the way you got excited when the math was on that one slide.
That's my favorite slide.
But that was great. I think overall, the last at least the last three or four presentations that you've had for us have been pretty consistent and with projections and with the outcomes, and we feel confident with our team. Okay, we're putting ourselves, you know, in with you guys. You know, we're part of the fiscal team. you guys do all the work. But do you feel the same? Do you feel? I mean, because when you're speaking, and you know, just the assertiveness and the positivity that you have when you're presenting. Do you feel that?
Yeah, absolutely. And I think a lot of it, and you touched on it, is we have such a great team that has helped just really, you know, develop this information, understand kind of the trends. Mr. Hillman, of course, leads us through that. And we just all come together to really look at to see where are we now and what are their projections based off of the information that we have. And I think that's helped us come up here and be able to communicate confidently what our budget is. And so that's mm-hmm. definitely been very helpful.
Yeah.
Just remember, you've seen her in the crystal ball, so clearly.
We have. Yes, we have. And like you said, Phil, I mean, we've been doing this for 15 years now.
Yeah, but we always appreciate the support of the board and the confidence that you have in us and what we do. I will say our team is phenomenal when they prepare the budget. And I was remiss earlier by not saying and recognizing them. It does take a lot of teamwork and Ms. Eastland's stewardship. But they are a phenomenal group in terms of putting the budget together.
I think this is the best team you've ever had.
I would not disagree.
Yeah. I think so. So, Dr. Hammond.
Good answer, Mr. Hillman. Just to further elaborate on the bond issuances, because that's a little bit of a not overly complex, but we have bonding authority. We have the ability to get $150 million in projects, whether it's four issuances, five issuances. It's predicated on assessed value of property. So assuming that your assessed values and your footprint go up, that gives you the eligibility for your issuances, and that kind of dictates how much we ask for. But once you get to 150, we're done. So that's kind of the key number to watch. I think if you go to the multi-year, that, you know, I think just to further elaborate on your response, because I think it was very well done, these numbers are fluid because they're based on assumptions. They're based on assumptions of declining enrollment. As you know, those COLA numbers are fluid. So, you know, I'll just randomly pick 26, 27. So, Mr. Hillman, if, right now it's a 3.02 COLA. If the state continues to be schizophrenic with the tariffs and the uncertainty of the markets, the global markets, and that COLA goes to 2%, what happens to our income?
It's lower.
It goes lower. And so if things turn around and it becomes a 5% COLA, numbers go
higher.
And when you look on those out years, what are the assumptions on increased, and I'll be intentional when I say this, ongoing obligations? So when we're negotiating annually, what are we assuming on those out years for things that could be ongoing obligations that increase the stress on the budget?
Yeah, as I mentioned, step and column would be one of them, but we assume about 3-4% increase before the year starts of ongoing obligations,
right,
that we know we have to fund. That's a fair number.
That's primarily inflation, but it does. But looking at the multi-year, we don't really assume any. We can't predict because our negotiated agreements have to be bargained.
Correct.
So these are zeros moving forward.
Correct. Collective bargaining is not accounted for in the out years. Correct.
Yeah. So I think that's what makes this a very challenging time for us, as healthy and as our budget is, and as well done as it's been put together by the exceptional staff that Mr. Hillman and Ms. Eastland lead. There are challenges on the horizon. The one-time funds are sunsetting. We have a lot of great programs and services that we need to try to maintain, but income coming from the state level and even some of the nonsense that's happening at a federal level between the Department of Ed and their role with states and LDAs. There's a lot of uncertainty ahead. And so I think the stewardship of our team, your leadership as a board, and the ability to have reserves to handle uncertainties, and I will make a 100% bold prediction, there will be uncertainties. There will be things that you do not expect that will happen, and without reserves, we will have a hard time dealing with those uncertainties.
It's a living document.
It's a living document, correct.
All right, well, thank you, guys. Thank you, Vanessa. Thank you, Phil.
Have a nice summer. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay. Moving on to Section F, public comments by attendees. This is inclusive of OMTA, CSEA, parent groups, individual staff, students, families, business partners, public agencies, nonprofit groups, and other members of the public. Ms. Surma, do we have any yellow slips?
No.
Thank you. Moving on to Section G, consent calendar, seeking a motion.
I move.
I have two motions. I need one second.
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Anyone abstaining? So carried. Moving on to H, discussion, action, public hearing items. H1 is the first reading of board policies, administrative regulations, board bylaws, and exhibits. All available supporting information under separate cover. Oh, a bunch of them here. Business services, human resources, and learning and teaching. Seeking a motion.
I move.
I have Chris first. I'll take the second. Was that Sarah?
Yes.
Okay. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone say no? Anyone abstaining? So carried. Moving on to H2 under learning and teaching. Second reading and adoption of the 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District's Local Control Accountability Plan. I always have trouble saying accountability. Seeking a motion?
I move.
Second?
Second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes? Anyone abstaining? Okay, put that one in the book. We have a public hearing item. Second public hearing regarding the proposed 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District Special Education Local Plan Area Annual Service Plan. The mics are open at?
Madam President, the time is 6:59 p.m.
6:59 p.m. The mics are open. Come on down. Anyone?
Madam President, the time is 7 p.m.
You guys were not fast enough. 7 p.m. The mics are closed. Bringing us down to H4, adoption of the 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District Special Education Local Plan Area Annual Service Plan. Looking for a motion. Did you motion that? Look at you. You were fast. The fog is lifted, ladies and gentlemen. I need a second.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Anybody say no? Anybody just kicking it? Okay. That is in the book. Moving on to H5, second public hearing regarding the proposed 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District Special Education Local Plan Area Annual Budget Plan. Mics are open at?
Madam President, the time is 7 p.m.
That's a long minute.
Madam President, the time is 7:01 p.m.
Mics are closed at 7:01. Bringing us to H6, adoption of the 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District Special Education Local Plan Area Annual Budget Plan. Need a motion?
Move.
I need a second. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. All against? Nobody against? Anybody standing by? Okay. So carried. In a book. Okay, moving on to business services, H7, adoption of the resolution for 2024-25-106, established committed fund balance in the special reserve fund for other than capital projects. Seeking a motion. Chris moves.
I second.
Sonia seconds. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any noes? Anyone abstaining? So carried. H8. Public hearing item, second public hearing regarding the proposed 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District budget. Mics open at?
Madam President, the time is 7:02 p.m.
Thank you, sir. Mics are open.
Madam President, the time is 7:03 p.m.
7:03, mics are closed. Moving on to H9, adoption of the 2025-2026 Ontario Montclair School District budget. Seeking a motion. I have a motion. I need a second. Chris seconds. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any noes? Anyone abstaining? Our budget is in. It's momentous. Okay, moving on to H10. Memorandum of Understanding between the Ontario Montclair School District and the Ontario Montclair Teachers Association regarding a stipend for a 7-period day. Seeking a motion.
I move.
I have two. I need a second.
I'll second.
The same two. Irma, you pick. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone saying no? Anyone abstaining? So carried. Turn the page, people. H11, first reading of the draft expanded learning opportunity program plan guide. Looking for a motion.
I move.
I need a second.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Any noes, any abstaining? So carried. Under learning and teaching, H12, adoption of the resolution 2024-25-105, declaring the importance of early childhood reading in aiding accelerated reading, or learning rather, amongst preschool and transitional kindergarten students. Chris, you want to make that motion?
Yes, I do.
She does. Give it to her, guys. Who wants to second that?
I'll second it.
All right. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Anyone saying no? Better not. Anyone abstaining? So carried. Okay. All right, ladies. Here we go. H13. Adoption of the resolution 2024-25-107, establishing committed fund balance in the general fund. Seeking a motion. Second?
I second.
All in favor say aye.
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 Uh-huh.
Ooh, was that everybody? Yes? Anybody say no? Is someone abstaining?
Okay. No, we're all here.
Okay, all right. Moving on to section I, comments and recommendations by the Board of Trustees. This time I'll go in order, starting with Flora. Aye.
Stay hydrated, everybody. Have a good night.
Caught you off guard, didn't I? Okay, Ms. Brake.
I have no comments, but I hope you'll be joining us at the 4th of July parade. We're looking forward to it.
All right, moving on to Ms. Sonia.
Yep, we hope you joined us for 4th of July. Have a nice evening. Thank you.
Moving on to Sarah.
Hi. Thank you guys for sticking with us. Have a good night.
My goodness. They're either hungry, they're tired, or I don't know what's going on. Okay, well, I guess I'll just follow suit. And thank you for being here so far. And I'll pass it on to Dr. Hammond.
Your OPD recognition.
Oh, yeah, my OPD. Thank you so much. Migraine night. I'm sucking it up to here tonight. Okay, let's give applause to our people that keep us safe, Ontario PD, and our campus safety. We truly appreciate you so much. And thank you to everyone who's been here tonight and supporting OMSD. Yeah. Okay, now it's your turn.
Just real quick, summer programs are going very well. I think our classified and certificated staff and administrators are doing phenomenal work with our summer programming. And even though this is not an official state term, I think it's more of an official county term, but Mr. Hillman needs to be applauded as well as Ms. Eastland and their team for not only doing a great budget presentation, but it's another consecutive year. I'm going to say 14 years, Mr. Hillman, of positive budget certification, which means you are solvent for the current year and the 2 years out after that. So, well done.
Thank you, sir. They say happy birthday to Miss Alana. It was her birthday a couple days ago. Hey, happy birthday.
I didn't know that.
Yep. You gotta say happy birthday to her. She's still accepting gifts.
Birthday week.
Birthday week. Birthday month. Birthday month. Okay, now we have Section K, Information Announcements, K1, California Local Performance Indicators for State, LCFF Priorities 1, 2, 3, 6, 7, and 7, Informational Items Available Under Separate Cover, K2, Future Agenda Items, you know, Meet the Criteria 9322, K3, Next Regular Board Meeting, July 3, 2025 at 6 p.m. right here, open session, could be 6:03 depending, you know. And before we move to the next portion of the agenda, we took a recess from our earlier closed session last time, and we need to resume back to finish up some items. At this time, I ask my colleagues to join me and to continue our closed session. Once we conclude, we will return to report out closed session and adjourn our meeting. We're not asking you guys to stay because it might take a minute. I mean, a minute. Okay, so you guys are free to go home, enjoy your evening, eat, read a book, watch or binge your show, and get some good sleep. But thank you for being here and have a good evening, okay? If you're still here, I'm going to be worried. All right, have a good night. Okay, we are reconvening. Call out of closed session actions.
There weren't any.
Mr. Secretary, what say you?
Madam President, there is nothing to report.
Why do I even have you here? Okay. Moving on to Section M, adjournment. I need a motion.
I move.
I need a second.
I second.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Have a good night. Take care of each other and be good. Meeting adjourned.